Tell me, what makes a good vet?
Love the animals. And be able to understand them.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My home is alive. I hatch from an egg. I have a sharp beak. On my own, I can travel 200 miles per hour, but I prefer to hitch a ride instead. There are more than 1,000 kinds of me. I have long, powerful back legs. In fact, for my size, I'm the world's best jumper. I eat only one thing, blood. Who is this mystery critter? This mystery critter is a flea. The largest fleas are only 1/3 of an inch long. The smallest are hardly visible. For their size, fleas are champion jumpers. They can jump 300,000 times non-stop. Thanks to their long, strong legs, they leap high and far, up to 80 times their height and 150 times their length. If humans could do that, we'd be able to jump over a building 50 stories high and 3 football fields long. Fleas live on other animals, including birds, humans, rats, mice, and dogs. Their flat bodies make it easy to travel through a forest of fur or feathers. Their skin, which is tough and spiny, protects them against animals who try to bite or scratch them off. Fleas use their sharp beaks to pierce skin so that they can suck an animal's blood. They store the blood in their bellies and can live on it for weeks. Of course, being at home for fleas is no fun. So if you notice your pets scratching and shaking, take them to a veterinarian. He or she can recommend a good treatment that'll keep your furry friend flea-free. And these facts and critter clues come from the Humane Society Press. Kind News, Book of Critter Clues. My babies are called puppies. I'm often kept as a pet. My tail is so short you can't see it. My eyebrows help me feel my way around. I have sharp teeth that never stop growing. Hang on. When I'm afraid, I make a whistling sound or stand perfectly still. Cavy is my other name. My wild relatives live in South America. Who is this mystery critter?
Rabbit. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun. Rabbit. Mystery critter is a guinea pig. Guinea pigs are not related to pigs, but are rodents. Other kinds of rodents are squirrels, beavers, mice, and rats. To be more exact, guinea pigs belong to a family of animals called cavies. These are rodents who usually have chubby bodies, small legs, and short, rough hair. Wild cavies live in large groups in the grasslands and mountains of South America. They feed on grass, fruits, and vegetables, and their teeth never stop growing. To keep their teeth short, guinea pigs have to constantly gnaw on hard surfaces. Guinea pigs have long whiskers and eyebrows that stick out, which are great for feeling what's around them. They also have a super sense of smell, and they mark their territory with scent glands. Guinea pigs communicate with group members using a variety of sounds, including whistles and squeals. Given a proper diet, care, and plenty of attention, they make wonderful pets who live for up to 5 years. What kind of animals did the vet work with? Do you remember?
Dogs. Well, they had a cat there, but he wasn't sick.
Mm-hmm.
Cats?
Mostly smaller animals, yeah.
And dogs, and rabbits.
What was that called? That chinchilla? Yeah, rabbits. Yeah.
Well, that was what there was that day.
Yeah, gerbils, probably small stuff, right?
Maybe.
Dr. Angela Whalen, a veterinarian, and I've been practicing for the last 16 years. A lot of veterinarians will do just small animal or large animal. Sometimes you will get a large animal veterinarian that there isn't a whole lot of work to do to fill a whole 24 hours, 5 days a week, so that sometimes those veterinarians will do small animals as well. But when you do large animals, most of the time you have to travel from farm to farm to farm. So it is quite time consuming as well.
Is it true that cats are colorblind?
No one knows.
Well, according to what science these days, people don't know if cats are colorblind, but the rods and everything in their eyes are made up differently than our eyes, so it is assumed that cats are probably colorblind.
And how about dogs? Is it true that dogs are colorblind?
Yes and no, because dogs can see some color, according to some research I just did, but they have some trouble seeing bright colors. For example, a dark red ball could appear a pale pink to them.
But is it important, Roman, for dogs to see colour?
No.
Dogs, they hunt at dusk and dawn. So yeah, instead of recognising... That's right. Yeah. So instead of recognising colours, their keen eyes are better at seeing in dim light.
They don't need to see
colour. Very right. Especially good at focusing on the quick movements of rabbits and other animals a dog would hunt.
That makes a lot of sense, too, to just see in shades of gray. If you are an animal that has to hunt, then too much color is going to be too distracting. Shades of gray, you can focus in on movement.
Okay, so Bromin, you're getting a kitten soon, right?
Yes.
And would it be an indoor or an outdoor one, do you think?
Indoor.
Mm-hmm. Why?
So it will live longer.
Why?
Because they can get killed by cars, and they're not as healthy.
I think if a cat is going outdoors, you have to still assume responsibility for the cat. They can cause traffic accidents. They're very much road hazards, and you can actually be fined if your cat runs across the road and there's a traffic accident. So we do recommend that they are supervised, putting a harness on them. That's a really good idea, and if you start from when they're a kitten, then they adapt quite well. Also, if you're going outdoors, you have to watch for fleas, okay, making sure they're protected from fleas. And there may be other cats or other animals that pass through your backyard, so you want to watch out that they don't have any altercations, fights, those types of things. So sometimes with indoor cats, we forget that they still need their physical activity, and that will get a lot of sedate cats, and we tend to feed them too much, and yeah, they tend to be quite overweight. So potentially they're safer indoors, but we still have to assume responsibility for their well-being inside as well, that we're watching them closely. So I think you can get the best of both worlds as long as you're paying close attention.
Do you like the animals that you work with?
Love the animals I work with. Yeah.
Dear Dr. Kind, how long do pet rabbits live? Dear Carly, most pet rabbits live about 5 years, but some have lived as long as 15. How long pets live depends on the care they receive. Rabbits kept in outdoor hutches pens may not get enough exercise. They can become bored and sick. They are also in danger from other animals because of these risks. They may live only a year. Pet rabbits kept indoors usually live much longer. These smart, curious critters can be trained to use a litter box. They can also learn to come when they are called. Remember, rabbits will nibble on everything, furniture to electrical wires. So before adopting a long-eared friend, bunny-proof your home.
You said you wanted to be a vet. You want to be a vet, right? Do you still want to be a vet after
Yes.
that?
Yes. Yeah. Of course I do. Mm-hmm.
Tell me, what makes a good vet?
Love the animals. And be able to understand them.
Listening, being able to listen to the pet. How about listening to the owner? Is that important?
Yeah. And be able to see the stuff that in the animal and listen to what the owner is saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those qualities there. Mm-hmm. All right.
What are the qualities of a good vet? Well, I think first and foremost, I think you have to be a good listener. You have to be able to hear what an owner's concerns are about their pet. Second is you have to have compassion. You have to be able to show people that you do care about their animal and that you have the animal's best interest in mind. Third of all, then depends on the knowledge that you have. There is an awful lot to learn in veterinary medicine, but you could be the most knowledgeable person, and if you don't have a very good personality or if you don't show compassion to the animals, then you're not going to be a very successful person. So I think that those first two attributes that I talked about are very, very important, and it looks like all these girls really love the animals, eh? Yeah. That's good. There are several schools for veterinarians in Canada. There's one in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. There is one in Quebec, St. Hyacinth. And then there is Guelph, and then there's one in Calgary. Once you've completed high school, then you have to do a year of university level credits of math and sciences, and then you can apply to the vet colleges. And if you get in, then the vet college course itself is a 5-year program.
What are the challenges you face on a day-to-day basis when you heal animals?
I have to really rely on the owner to tell me what they have concerns about. Is the animal not eating? Is it peeing too much? Is it vomiting? How long it's been vomiting for? All those types of things. So I really have to be an observant person and look closely to see how the animal is acting, subtle color changes, if there's any signs of pain, and then go from there and try to set up a master probabilist is what I call it, of what possible things could be going on with that animal. And then I can decide if I want to draw some blood work or do an x-ray or something else to try to help me figure out what's going on so I can appropriately treat the animal and make it feel better. But I would say the fact that they can't talk to me is one of the most challenging things. Yeah. There are veterinarians that practice specifically with holistic veterinary medicine, but it does take a lot of study and training in the proper attributes for that particular area. So I tend to stick with more Western type medicine, and so it depends if we have an animal with an infection, maybe they need antibiotics. If we have an animal with a heart problem, maybe they need something to help the heart beat stronger or something to get rid of the fluid that's accumulating. So there's several different types of medications that we would use. And there might be a couple of, you could almost call them homeopathic remedies that we might suggest sometimes for flea control, you know, using garlic, that type of thing. Cranberry juice for animals with multiple bladder infections. But most of the time, what I know best is Western medicine. If people want to pursue the avenue of holistic medicine, then I will refer them to a holistic veterinarian. I was going to say too, have you ever been to the chiropractor? Yeah, we don't do chiropractic here, but there are veterinarians that will also do chiropractic work as well with animals. So especially when you see animals like a dachshund. Do you know what a dachshund looks like? They've got a long back, short legs, and they can be prone to back problems. So there are chiropractors that specialize in helping those animals deal with the increased stress that can be placed on their back.
Thank you. piggy was, clutching forks and knives to eat the bacon.
One more time.
What kind of cat did she recommend for longevity? What's the best kind of cat to get?
A short-haired cat, and she said don't go for a cat that's coughing or sneezing or something, because it'll probably get some kind of, probably you could have some kind of sickness that she might not be able to cure. So go for a very healthy cat.
Yeah.
But I still want a long-haired cat. I like long, long hair. I do all the grooming. I wouldn't care.
The cats have like this long hair all the way to their feet. Their feet.
Yeah, but no, she said not to get certain kinds of, like, Siamese or these kind of cats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
No idea.
You remember?
No.
Because they're rare.
Yeah.
Their gene pool is very narrow, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Let's get the common keys.
Mm-hmm.
Probably I would stick with just your average domestic short hair cat. If you start going into the purebreds, the Siamese, Cornish Rexes, and those types of things, then those animals, there's not a lot of those animals, and that they can be more prone to certain genetic problems. And just make sure that when you choose a kitten, that you're looking at their general health as well. You don't, even though you might feel sorry for a kitten that has a cold, gungy eyes and is sneezing, those kittens can be really sick with a lot of devastating diseases that I can't do much about. So yeah, so it's always good to look for really healthy kittens.
What about long haired cats? Would those be difficult?
Yeah, long haired cats are really good as well. You just have to make sure you're grooming them regularly, because their coat can tend to knot and form a lot of mats. And as well, if they're grooming themselves, they have more of a tendency to hairball. So I love domestic long hair cats as well, but they tend to have just a few more problems. So you just have to be dedicated to grooming.
Mm-hmm. I think she has 50 horses or something, 50 or 15. And she has one dog and four cats. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got lots of horses at home, and I've got four cats at home. Three of them stay at the farm, and then Oreo stays up at the house. He's very spoiled. He's on my bed most of the time. And then I did have three dogs. I'm down to one dog now, and her name is Fresca, and she is 12 years of age, and she's a miniature schnauzer.
You got any names for your pet?
Yeah, but none of them have been accepted very much.
Mm-hmm.
Aria.
Shadow. Donut. Biscuit. Apple.
This is all for a cat?
Yeah.
Shadow, say Shadow.
Shadow for a cat?
It's a dog name.
Raisin.
Okay.
Mindy.
Mindy. Sit down.
Muffin.
Muffin's nice.
Crookshanks.
Sea Biscuit.
Okay.
Oh, that's a horse name, you guys.
I think the biggest problem is for any veterinary clinic or the SPCA is that for insurance purposes they have to be a certain age. So probably the best thing that you can do for information, go on the internet and search the internet. There's a lot of children friendly sites there, and B, really get to know your neighbors that have pets and offer your services for house sitting if they go away for the night and or go away on holiday for a week, and that's what I used to do when I was little all the time.
Oh yes. She kind of at least sits and take care of people's pets and clean their stuff.
Just offer her services to help.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys could do that too. Microchips. She showed you, right?
I thought it was gross.
Okay, what bothers you about microchips?
Well, they're computers, really. They're little computers. I don't like it. Animals should be free to do what they will.
But then, in that case, why have a pet then?
Because the cat can still do what it will.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that the microchip is kind of like taking away the dignity of the animal?
Yes.
But wouldn't the tag also do the same thing? Maybe not. I'm just trying to understand what. Yeah. What is it that's kind of gross? What is it that's gross about a microchip now? What bothers you about it?
Just in order to make money for the people who make microchips. Yeah. It's not really going to help.
Not that you
from. Get lost and killed just because they've got a metal smaller than a grain of rice in one button. And what if it caused some kind of diseases because of the
microchip? I mean, she said the microchips never caused anything like that, but.
Well, she said it did cause something on one of the animals.
Yeah, see?
The animals got sick because of the microchip.
She said it's probably just badly put in, but I don't know about that.
Actually, I recommend microchips. They're very small. I could show you a microchip if you want to, or at least what we use for the microchips. And basically, they're no bigger than a grain of rice, and they're just implanted underneath the skin. And the best reason for doing a microchip is for safety. If your animal gets out and it runs away, then you've got that standard form of identification. Other options used to be tattooing, but tattoos fade, they can be difficult to read, they were in the ear area, and they tend to hurt more during the recovery time period. With collars, they can have the potential to get caught, and I have seen cats that have been hung by a collar.
Okay, here's something.
Yeah.
Dear Dr. Kai, why do bats hang upside down? Dear Charles, for the bones in their legs to the tendons in their toes, bats are built for hanging. In fact, they're not good at standing or running at all. Bats also have trouble taking off from the ground. Hanging allows them to simply let go of their perch and start flapping. For bats, hanging is easy. Strong tissues in their toes, called tendons, help them get a firm grip on their perch. Plus, the weight of their hanging body locks their claws into place. Bats most often hang from roof rafters or branches, or they cling to rocks or cave walls. Just one foot will hold bats upside down while they're sleeping. In fact, bats sometimes keep hanging even after they've died. Sincerely, Dr. Kind.
So that's some interesting facts about animals.
Hi, I'm Judy. I look after the boarding and daycare, and this is just the front area. This is the daycare cubbies, and it's what we do here. All the daycare dogs' belongings in it, and we label it so this way we don't get mixed up with their leashes and their collars and that. That's a small playroom, and I've got puppies in there.
The daycare room, we don't leave the water in the room.
Yeah.
We just leave toys because they make a lot of mess. They play with the water dishes, and somebody obviously had a little bit of an accident in there. You know, puppies don't like to hold it in for very long.
Well,
so,
they're really noisy. Like, is this
yeah, well, because we're coming in and we're looking through the window, so they're getting carried away. But every 2 hours I take them out for a pee break and they have a drink of water. Yeah, and then the next room, if you wouldn't mind, just follow me down here. I'll show you the large playroom. Before we came down, they were all asleep on their beds because it's after 1 o'clock, so they're a bit tired. They've been playing since about 8:30, all these guys.
So do you do the grooming here as well?
Yes, I don't do the grooming. This is the groomer over here. This is Erin, and she does the grooming, and this is her grooming area. We don't like to put our hand into the cage because that's her own space, so they might feel a little bit threatened. So she's got a little bed in there, and she's comfortable. And Erin likes to put a bandana on her to make her look pretty when she's done. And as well with the boarding dogs, they get walked in the morning and the evening, but we also take them out in between that time. Oh, that's another grooming dog. Yeah. Yes, I enjoy my work a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of fun because I meet a lot of different animals, different personalities, and it's nice to be one-on-one with them. Well, I did some experience at MAC. My father had worked there, so I got some animal experience there. And then also I had my own animals. So, yeah. But I'm not a technician, so I didn't go to schooling for technician. The girl on the other side, Anna, she's a technician, so she did a lot of schooling to be a technician. These are people's pets, and when your pet could be the greatest animal at home, but with a stranger, they could be scared, and they may bite. But that's the only reason. But we do have co-op students that come in, and as well as volunteers. There's a certain age for that, and it's great when they come in too. It's extra hands, and they get to come in and play with the animals, and they learn a lot.
How old do you have to be?
I believe it's either 16 or 18. I'm not sure on that.
Friend or foe. A fox slipped in climbing a fence. To save himself from falling, he clashed at a briar bush. The thorns made his paws bleed, and in his pain, he cried out, "Oh dear! I turned to you for help, and you have made me worse off than I was before." "Yes, my friend," said the briar. "You made a bad mistake when you tried to lay hold of me. I lay hold of everyone myself." The incident illustrates the folly of those who run for aid to people whose nature it is to hurt rather than to help.
A fable of Aesop.
Penguin Classics.
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.